Are you okay? A man calls from midway down the steps. His dog begins to yap at me.
Help!
I croak. That's all I can manage as I crawl on the wavy surface, water crashing over my head as I slip and lose my pace. My strength is dwindling, which is why I can't seem to stand without falling. It's as if my legs don't belong to me. Through chattering teeth, I try to call him again, but I can't. My arms are deadening too. Cold. So cold. I wonder if I'll make it to the man. All I have to do is push further and harder. A clash of thunder fills the air and rain begins to pelt down. I can't do this. I'm not going to make it. The sea keeps trying to drag me out. Is this how it ends? The sea taking both sisters. The man might only be a short distance away, but the sea kills. And I know it's trying to kill me right now. Another crashing wave sends me falling and hurtling under the surface, and I feel my arm crunch against a rock. As hard as I try to hold my breath, it's no good. I let that water in, and I'm suffocating. I'm going to die. Will killed me. Bringing me here was his parting shot. 26. Kate. Where am I? The shouting hurts my head. As I open my stinging eyes, I'm at the top of the steps, covered in a foil blanket. I've been saved. The man's terrier begins to lick the salt from my face, and I welcome its warmth.
You're okay, he says,
as he places a warm hand on my arm. I glance at the angel above me and gasp. There's no way I can answer him right now. But I'm safe.
We're going to get you in the pub, warm you up a bit, okay? Paramedics are on the way, but it could take a while.
All I can do is cry, grateful that this man put himself at risk to help me. Two men and a woman head over, and they all help me up, and part carry me into a cozy pub. Flames lick the hearth as a huge chunk of wood catches. The customers are asked to retreat to the lounge, leaving me alone with my rescuer and the woman. As I violently shiver, the man hauls my limp body onto a couch by the window, and the woman hurries over with a pile of towels and a huge fluffy hoodie. My teeth won't stop chattering, making it impossible for me to create coherent words. I want to thank them, tell them that I owe them my life, but I can't.
Hello, my lovely. There's help on the way. We're going to get you checked out. Just hang in there. Was there anyone else out there with you?
The woman dabs and rubs at me with the towel. Then she removes my jacket and replaces it with a dry hoodie.
I nod. Jeff, we need to get rescue out there now.
No, I stammer. Someone attacked me.
Forget that, Jeff. Don't call rescue. Call the police.
With stiff fingers, I pull my phone from my bra and pass it to the woman. She takes it, but it's not coming to life. Then I remember that it died. I wonder if too much water got in it. If I can't get my phone going, I have no idea how I'm going to contact Damien. He doesn't have any idea I'm here, and that someone left me in that cave to die. Tears fall down my face, and the woman wedges in beside me and gives me a hug, transferring her much-needed body heat.
It's okay. Let's get you properly warmed up. Jeff, throw some more logs on that fire.
I want to tell her it's not going to be okay.
You're safe now.
I'm not safe. Now that I know someone wants me dead, the game has changed. Will brought me here to kill me. To kill me along with Jess. Reaching deeply into my jeans pockets, I pull out my keys. I have to get to the car and get back to the cottage. Damien has to know what's going on. Nudging the woman, I try to get up.
You're not going anywhere in this state.
I snivel and choke on my tears as I try again, this time succeeding.
I can't stay here. My family might be in danger.
At first, I walk with a stagger. Then I manage a few steps in a straight line. With the feeling coming back to my body, I'm good to go. All I want to do is get back to the cottage, be with my family, and have a hot shower.
But the police are on their way, the man with the terrier says.
Thank you, all of you. I'm sorry.
With that, I open the door and allow it to slam behind me. I'm shivering so hard, I ache and tiredness enshrouds me. I want to get back to the cottage. Then I'll go to the police with Damien. First, I need him to know how much I love him. Then I need to sort my phone out. I'm going to find out who did this to me if it's the last thing I do. After what feels like an eternity of stepping into puddles and listening to the low rumbling of thunder above, I reach the car park just before the heavens open. Hopping and staggering, I hold my keys out. It's a far cry from earlier. I'm the only person in the car park and there aren't many cars. I instinctively gaze around for the dark car that was by the cottage, but I can't see it. It takes me several attempts to press the open button. It doesn't work. The seawater must have killed that too, along with my phone. I prod the key at the lock, but scrape the paint instead.
Damn it! All I want to do is curl up and cry.
Taking a deep breath, I try again. This time the key enters the lock, and I open the door. Without wasting a second, I turn the ignition on and pop the heating on its highest setting. Cold air comes from every vent. As I go to start the wipers, I see a bit of folded paper on my windscreen. It's a parking ticket. I ran out of time. Great. I read on, looking for the number to call in order to sort this out when I get back. The paper mulches in my wet hands, and I can barely read what's on it. That's when I see the message in the dirt on the passenger window. Then rain starts to pepper the glass, washing it away.
This can't be real. I plug my phone in, hoping that it will spark to life.
But it doesn't. I don't even know the way home without maps. My gaze flits to every corner of the car park. I see a figure walking along the back of the car park through the rain-smeared windows, but it vanishes into the darkness. Struggling to control the sobs that are forcing themselves up my throat, I lock the doors. I lie back as the warm air floods me, my senses getting sharper. That message tells me everything I need to know. I feel sick to the stomach knowing that someone tried to kill me. The scrawl is barely readable now, as the message drips away down the window. Slamming my hands on the steering wheel, I yell as tears fill my face. I can't even take a photo of it. The message is lost forever, but I'll never forget what it said. You've already stayed too long. A face appears at the window and I scream. He's trying to open the door. The man in the dark coat stares at me with pleading eyes as I grip the handle. All this time, my father was here following me. Was it not enough that he allowed Jess to die that day? Did he have to come back and finish me off too?
Katie, open up.
I shake my head. There's no way I'm letting him in. Tears drip down my face as I rev up the engine. I have to get out of here now.
I can explain.
No, he can't.
How did he know I was here?
He had to be following me. It's only now I wonder if he is Will.
Why would my father do this to me?
He hasn't changed at all. 27. Natalie. Natalie gazed through the window, close enough to see through the distortion on the curved glass. She could see Kyle propping the bar up, nursing one of what looked like many drinks,
judging from the empties and shorts lined up next to him. No, she couldn't walk in there while Kyle was with all his friends and show him the message about Rachel. But then again, the man deserved the full truth. What kind of relationship did Kyle and Mary have? Kyle had a fling with Laura. And Mary had... Natalie shook her head as she imagined her husband naked with Mary. A tear slipped down her cheek. Alan hadn't touched her like that for years now, and that hurt. Where had they had sex? On Mary's boat? In their cars? In their marital beds? She pulled a sour face as she imagined them grunting away on her bed. She was going to get a new one as soon as possible. She pulled the hood up on her raincoat and waited, weighing up what to do. Selecting Mary's number on her phone, she sent a WhatsApp message. "I'm outside the pub. If you don't come out, I'm coming in, and I'm going to tell Kyle about Rachel. I will tell him everything." Natalie watched as the two ticks turned green. Mary had read the message. A rumble of thunder sent a shiver running down her spine. Soon another shower began to fall. Within moments, she heard bottles spilling into the bin around the back. Mary appeared through the alleyway that led to the pub's beer garden that was currently closed for refurbishment. Mary had told the whole community enthusiastically about the new play area, but Natalie didn't care then, and she didn't care now. Mary's umbrella opened out with a whoosh. First she checked behind her, then she checked down both sides of the path before she beckoned Natalie over. "Can we go somewhere else?" Mary didn't stop to hear the answer that Natalie was about to give. Instead, she hurried through the streets. Running to keep up, Natalie followed her to the end of the path. They turned a corner and she kept walking, all the way past the Admiral Boscan pub and onto the seafront. As they passed the beach cafe, the woman finally slowed down.
"Nat, I'm so sorry. We didn't mean to hurt you. We really didn't, and I didn't want you to find out the way you did."
"You didn't want me to find out at all," Natalie shrugged. "Kyle knows too. How could you do that to him?"
"I'm not the only one who cheated in our marriage."
"But you're the only one who cheated with my husband."
Tears rolled down Natalie's cheeks. She could see what Alan had seen in her. The woman looked amazing. She glanced down at her dowdy flat boots and the old jeans that were tucked in. Mary stepped closer and placed a hand on Natalie's arm.
"I didn't mean to hurt anyone. You lost Alan, and he thought the world of you. We were stupid, and it became a habit. It meant nothing. I know you want to burst into the pub and upset Kyle more than he already is, but it wouldn't help."
"It would help me, and don't try to tell me that an affair that lasted decades meant nothing."
She shook the woman's hand away.
"I'm begging you. I love Kyle. We've both made mistakes, and I want to work things out with him for the sake of Rachel and our granddaughter. Please believe that I've changed. If I could go back and do everything differently, I would."
For the first time ever, Natalie could see that the woman in front of her, her husband's lover, was feeling the pain too.
"Where did you both meet up?"
"You don't want to do this to yourself. You don't get to say what I want. You owe me the truth."
Mary swallowed and wiped her eyes. "At my boat." Exhaling, Natalie clenched her fists. All that time they were having sex in that boat, and she hadn't suspected a thing. How stupid had she been? Cody knew. Kyle even found out somehow. Everyone probably knew.
"And Rachel? Does Kyle know that he isn't her father?"
"What? We had an affair,
but that doesn't make Alan her father. Mary turned away and shook her head.
I had a paternity test done. Rachel is not Alan's daughter. She's Kyle's.
That's not what Alan thought. I saw the messages. All these years he wanted to see the results of the paternity test, and you wouldn't show him.
He said the timings added up.
Just tell the truth, Mary. Show me the results. I don't want to have to ask Kyle.
Her gaze met Natalie's.
Kyle is Rachel's father. She loves him.
Mary began to sob loudly.
I've made so many mistakes, and I hurt you too. You have to leave Rachel out of this. It will destroy her.
Like you destroyed me. We were friends, not just friends, close friends, and I thought the world of you.
The rain began to pelt, and Mary kept back.
And I ruined it, and for that, I can't forgive myself. I miss you, Nat.
You don't miss our friendship at all. You're still the selfish little bitch you always were, and you'll never change.
Mary's umbrella blew inside out as a gust caught it. She whipped it on the floor in a temper before depositing the crunched-up metal and material into the bin.
Mary, what's come over you? Things not going as planned? You thought I'd forgive you, and we could all move on and play nicely in the playground again. No, I know I'm in the wrong. I love my daughter more than you can imagine.
More than I can imagine.
That touched a nerve. All Natalie had ever wanted was her own child, and she could imagine the love she'd have given.
If you loved your daughter like you say, you wouldn't lie to her.
And if you told her all this, you'd destroy her. Kyle is her father. You have to let this go.
I have to, do I? Why?
Because you said so.
I didn't mean...
I know what you meant.
Okay, let's put all our lies on the table. Your friend Laura had a fling with Kyle, did you know?
Natalie's stomach dropped as she brushed the raindrops into her hair.
Yes.
So why didn't you tell me?
Because you deserve it.
Right. There's a fair bit you don't know about Kyle or me. Kyle and I have had a patchy relationship, but we always forgive each other.
But he wouldn't forgive you if he found out Rachel wasn't his.
I'm sorry. How many more times do I have to say it? I'll do anything. I'm a shitty person, a disgusting excuse of a friend, but I'm a mother. One who loves her child so much it hurts. Kyle is her father.
I'll reserve judgment on that. Show me those DNA results. Mary pulled her phone out of her bag and it rang. Kyle's name on the screen lit up the darkness.
I've got to go.
As the woman turned to walk away, Natalie called out.
I heard you one night in the beer garden, about a month ago. You were telling someone what you saw on the day baby Jessica disappeared.
I know everything. Mary stopped under a lamplight, keeping her back to Natalie.
If you know what's good for you, you won't say a word.
Natalie sloshed in the puddles until she reached her. Grabbing Mary by the arm, she spun her around.
Is that a threat?
A worried look appeared across Mary's face and she swallowed.
No, you can't say anything. Promise me you won't. Too many people will get hurt. Let that poor baby's memory rest in peace.
Peace? Natalie had seen the hurt etched on Kate's face as she watched her from the shop. The family weren't at peace, and with journalists bringing the story up over and over again, they never would find peace. She went to speak, but she couldn't get her words out. Why would Mary want to keep the secret about Archie? It was like a light bulb moment.
Have you been sleeping with Cody, too?
Are you trying to protect him?
Mary's eyebrows furrowed, and her bottom lip trembled. With a shake of her head, she walked away in the rain, leaving Natalie alone. Cody had told her to keep away from Kyle and the smuggler, but that was a lie. Cody only wanted her to stay away from Mary, nothing more. That woman had him wrapped around her little finger, just like she had with Alan. Natalie thought of Cody's second wife, a lovely woman who'd brought his daughter up as her own for all these years. How she'd have killed for their life. Cody had everything. A lovely daughter, and an all-round great life. Did Cody know what Mary saw? And was she helping him to contain the secret? After all, if it was his dad's fault, keeping a secret that big would turn the whole town against him. It was so easy to blame the baby's drunken father, and leave it at that. Natalie stared at the sea and roared in frustration. No longer was she going to allow Mary to keep her secrets, and she wasn't going to take threats from her either. She'd made her decision, and she knew what to do next. Doing what was right came with a price, and she was ready to pay it. 28. Kate. Eventually, I find my way back to Lou. After a wrong turn, my phone finally warmed up and came on. I thought about pulling over and calling Damien, but what I have to tell him would be better said in person. All this time, my dad has been here watching me. A part of me wonders if he's been drinking again. Why else would he do this? I carefully drive along the treacherous little roads as rain pelts on the windscreen. Several delayed messages begin to ping up. I keep seeing Damien's name. A woman steps straight into the road, and I brake hard, skidding right up to her. She holds her hands up and shakes her head before continuing. Stepping out of the car, I shout that I'm sorry, but she continues. "Hey! You work at the ice cream shop!" I snatch the keys from the ignition as I chase after her. "Wait! I just want to talk to you!" She turns and glares at me with watery eyes as she lets out a sob. "Kate? You know who I am? I knew you did when you hid in your shop while I knocked. You know something, don't you?" Swiping the tears from her face, she shakes her head. "I don't know what I know. What I think I know might be nothing. I can't talk right now." She turns and hurries away. "You can't say that and walk away from me," I shout after her. "And I can't talk right now. Come and find me tomorrow." She's clenching her jaw and fists. I don't know whether it's because of me or something else. I suppose me nearly running her over might not have helped. I chase after her and grab her shoulder. "Stop!" I realize there's no one around. It's just her and me in a dark alley in the now pouring rain. There's a solid strength about her, and that scares me. I'm also weak from being cold and damp. The shakes that have plagued me since I came out of the sea are still there. A streak of lightning reaches across the sky, allowing me to see more of her features. Her stare is stark, and the crinkles around the edge of her eyes are deep. "You have to tell me what you know. I can't wait until tomorrow. This is my little sister we're talking about." She takes a step towards me. "It's all about you, isn't it? You're just like the rest of them. No one cares about what will happen to me. You. She jabs the air with her index finger. "Just leave me alone." She turns and walks away. "No!" I yell as I catch up with her again. I go to grab her arm, but she spins around and grips my wrist so hard I can feel her nails digging into my skin. There is a sadness etched into her face. With trembling hands, she loosens her grip and sighs. For all I know,
She could have been trying to kill me at the cave earlier. She could be the one watching me and sending those messages, and here I am on a dark, rainy night at her mercy. But it was my dad. It had to be. No, however much I try to picture him in that cave, I can't picture him hitting me over the head and leaving me to die. Maybe he is following me. But he wouldn't kill me, would he? Damn, my thoughts run rife. I don't know what to think anymore. Were you at Polperro earlier today? Her brow furrows. No. She pauses. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have grabbed your wrist like that. Shaking her head, she stops dead. That's okay. Please tell me what you know. I've spent years not knowing the details of Jess's accident. You don't know how it feels to be left in the dark for so long. Thunder clashes and she flinches. I know exactly how it feels to be lied to, deceived, and treated like an idiot. A tooting horn makes me gasp. Damn! I think your car is blocking the road. She hurries away, seizing her opportunity to escape my questions. Wait! Tomorrow! With that final word, she's gone. I dart back to the car and see three cars lined up. I'm parked badly, blocking the whole road. I hold up a hand and shout my apologies. The shaking heads and angry groans tell me that I need to move out of the way. So I pull over on the curb. Two cars pass, and my father pulls up behind me and gets out of his old red car. Katie, I need to explain. He's at the window again. If I don't face him now, he'll follow me back to the cottage, and I don't want to take whatever argument we're about to have back for the girls to see. I get out of the car. What? Actually, tell me why you've been following me. I got here today, and when I saw your car parked up opposite the cottage, I knew you'd come back. When I came around the back and heard you, I bottled it. I'm so sorry, Kate. So you followed me to Polperro? He shook his head. Not quite. But you knew I was there? He's starting to creep me out. How did you even know I was here right now? He pulled his phone from his pocket. I was worried about you, so I put a tracker on your phone when you came to see me. That's how I knew where you were staying, and that's how I knew you went to Polperro. I couldn't lose you too, Katie. Not after losing Jessica. I have been a terrible father, but I beg of you, please give me a chance to do the right thing. I pace up and down, pressing buttons on my phone, but I can't see the tracker. I'm sorry. What did you think you'd achieve? Did you think I'd say it was okay and we could all play happy families and continue with the holiday? He shook his head. No, I wanted to be here to help you. Well, that backfired. Your signal went off at Polperro Harbour. When I saw you crawling out of that cave, I grabbed the man with the dog and begged him to help you. I didn't want you to see me because I knew you'd be angry. But I saw you in the car park. I know, he shrugged. My father was there at the beach. Did you hurt me when I was in that cave? I stare into his eyes, determined to spot the lie, but all I can see is fear and loss. The memories of Jess are haunting him too. You have no reason to believe me, Katie, but I would never intentionally hurt you. I came to help you, and I want to stay and do everything I can. He takes his long black coat off and wraps it around my shoulders. How about the scrawl on my car window? Did you do that? He looks confused. I don't know anything about any scrawl on any window. I can't think. This is all too much. Can I stay with you? No! I shout. My children barely know who you are.
Where are you staying?
In my car.
I glance over and see the quilt folded up on the back seat.
Jeez. Just go home, Dad.
No, I lost Jess. I won't lose you. I'm sorry I wasn't there for you. I'm sorry for all the mistakes I've made. This time, I'm going to be right here. Call me if you need me. I won't need you. Go home and lose the tracker. I don't need you spying on me.
He bows his head and gets back into his car. I watch as he drives past me and takes a bend. Less than a minute later, I park up in our allocated space and get out of the car. Damien is already at the door, shrugging with his arms folded in front of his chest.
I've had it. You don't answer your phone. You've vanished for hours. Do you know how worried I've been? No, you don't, because you don't answer your phone.
I lock the car and run across the road. My straggly, sea-crisped hair sticks to my face, and I know I'm a little beaten. I can feel the sores on my lips and face. My damp jeans cling to my legs, and I can't stop shivering. It's like the danger I was in has finally hit me. Someone tried to kill me. The strength I had is all gone, and my stomach churns like I'm going to be sick with fear. My mum bracelet escapes from my sleeve, and I touch it and cry, knowing how close I was to never seeing my babies again. Damien helps me into the house and dumps me onto the settee. I grab the snuggle blanket and pull it over myself, taking a moment to think. Damien has moved to the doorway and picked up a bag.
I've called a taxi.
Damien, stop!
I'm up off the settee trying to grab his arm as he opens the door. He bats my hands away. Be a mother. Spend some time with the girls. We'll tie up loose ends when you get back. Enjoy your holiday without me in the way. Whoever this man is, he can have you all to himself now.
With that, he's gone, slamming the door in my face. I open it, but he's already striding around the corner. A car pulls up and he gets in. I've gone and done it. I've blown it with the person I love and he's gone. I grab my phone and call him, but it goes straight to voicemail. Sobs begin to escape as I close the door. The last thing I want to do is call my dad. But I can't be alone right now. So I touch his number and hold my phone against my ear. Katie? I cry like never before.
29. Kate. I tell my dad everything from start to end as I sip the sweet tea he made me. He's worried sick that I put my life in danger by running off to Polperro alone when someone is clearly targeting me. I sit on the settee, enjoying the comfort of the blankets and my fluffy bathrobe. He runs his hand over the grey stubble on his chin.
You know, Katie, whoever is sending these messages, they don't want to help you. They've seen that article, and now they've made you a target. And what's worse is you've played into their hands. They're like catfishing you or stalking you. I don't know what it's called, but we have to call the police.
The police never do anything. I'm sick of them taking my statements and never doing anything.
I've had this too over the years.
Messages.
He nods. I hadn't thought for 1 minute what my dad had gone through. I started reporting them to the police, like you. They all turned out to be nothing, and eventually they stopped listening. This is different. Someone tried to kill you today.
I'll think about it. I don't need him telling me what to do.
Do you want me to go?
I shake my head.
I can't do this alone, Dad. I pass him the blanket.
I'll get you a pillow.
I don't know how I'm going to explain all this to the girls.
Thanks.
He goes to hug me, but I move back. Sorry. Embracing my dad would be weird. I feel as though I don't know him. Shame burns through me. The people who helped me back at the pub in Polperro called the police, but I left them so that I could hurry home to Damien, and now he's left me. My phone was dead and damp, and I thought he'd be worried. I begin to rub the sore bump on my head. He'll come round. Give him a bit of space. It was all over that message. I pat my seeping head with a tissue. My dad gives me a sympathetic look. Let me take a look at that. He gently walks around me and pulls my hair apart. It's red and a little scabbed. You should really have it looked at. No. There's no way I'm leaving the girls to wake up and find him in the house without me at least explaining what has happened. And I don't want to spend all night in a queue at A&E. It's just a bit of a lump. It'll go down. I'm okay. I think my dad is right, though. My head is banging, and I'm still nauseous. But then again, I did swallow a lot of seawater, and then there's the stress of it all. You're not okay. You're going through a lot. One of the girls starts walking down the stairs. Who's there? I call. I pull my hair back over my sore head and smile. The last thing I want to do is alarm my children. Come here, Rosie. I give her a huge hug, enjoying her warmth and the smell of shampoo in her hair as she clutches Millie's flamingo toy.
Where have you been, Mummy?
I've been on a bit of an adventure, and a big wave went over my head, but I'm okay now.
We missed you today, Mummy.
She pouts and waits for me to answer, looking cute in her little mermaid costume. I missed you too, sweetie. Mummy had a few things to do, that's all.
Like what?
I had to spend a bit of time on my own, thinking about Jess.
Poor Mummy.
My sensitive little girl hugs me again. I close my eyes, trying hard to contain my tears. She rubs her eyes and stares at my dad.
Who's that?
That's your granddad. He's come to spend some time with us. Hello, Rosie. It's lovely to meet you. He holds a hand out for her, but she hides her head behind my arm. I love your mermaid costume. Are you a mermaid? Rosie smiles and nods.
Where's Daddy?
I exhale. He had to go home, sweetie. An urgent job came in, but we're staying here for the rest of the holiday. I tell you what, you get into bed, and I'll be up soon to read you and Millie a story, okay?
Okay. Is Grandad staying?
I nod. Yes, he'll be sleeping on the settee. She nods her head in an animated way and shrieks before running off. I hear her shouting with Millie as she closes their bedroom door. There is a loud bang at the front door, and I can't help but jerk in alarm. My dad gets up and pulls the curtains apart slightly. It's the police. Slowly, he opens the door. Hello, we're investigating an incident that was reported earlier. Do you mind if we step in? I'm PC Barnes, this is PC Bickerford. The tall, uniformed PC wipes his feet on the mat, and the younger female officer takes her raincoat off so she doesn't trail water into the living room. I'm Kate. I know they've come to speak to me. I just don't know how they found out where I was staying. How did you find me? The woman with the bobbed brown hair, gripped away from her face, smiles. An incident was reported out in Polperro this afternoon, and while we were speaking to everyone, we were given the coat you left behind. You had a water-damaged work ID in it, and a soggy receipt for a chip shop in Loo. We just about managed to work out the name of the place from the mulched-up paper. After asking around the pubs and restaurants, the landlord of this property recognized you and told us where you were staying. It's a small town thing. Do you have my coat? The woman nods.
Given the nature of what's been reported, we'd like to keep it for forensic analysis. We don't anticipate getting much from it, given that it got pretty wet. But you never quite know. I nod in agreement before sitting on the couch. Millie runs down, her auburn hair crazily up in several ponytails, in only the way that Rosie does it when they play.
Mummy, are you coming to read us a story?
She's holding her oversized party dress up so that she doesn't trip. Yes, sweetie, you go back up. I'll be there soon.
Who are these people?
Millie puts a finger in her mouth and begins to bite her nail. They are from the police. They just want to talk to us about something.
Are we in trouble?
The male officer takes off his hat and bends down to Millie's level. I'm PC Barnes, and it's lovely to meet you. Your mummy is helping us, that's all. No one is in any trouble. Millie giggles and runs back upstairs. Can I get anyone a drink? Dad leans against the kitchen doorframe. I think we could both do with a cuppa, PC Barnes says as he maneuvers his gangly frame further into the room. He places his hat on the coffee table, and PC Bickerford pulls out a notebook from her top pocket. May we sit down? Yes, of course. I step ahead of them, grabbing all the toys and books, then I throw them in a pile on the carpet. PC Barnes continues to speak. From what we were told, you were found trying to crawl off the beach as the tide was coming in. You then told our witness that someone attacked you. Can you tell us what happened today? I take a deep breath. All I want to do is sleep and try Damien's phone again. Everything is going to have to come out now. I bite my ragged bottom lip, and I wonder if I'll ever find out who Will is and why he's playing with me. 30. Kate. Clearing my throat, I begin. I was in the cave. In Polperro, PC Barnes seems to be the one doing the talking, while PC Bickerford writes. Yes, Willie Wilcox's cave. Do you know what time that was? As much as I try to recall even an estimate of the time, my mind is blank. It's like the whole afternoon and evening have mingled into one. Sorry, I got to Polperro after lunchtime. I had a pastry at a cafe and walked around for a while before heading to the beach. The sound of PC Bickerford's pen scraping on paper is setting my teeth on edge. My head is sensitive and everything throbs. Even the light in the room is starting to hurt my eyes. PC Barnes breaks the silence. Tell us what happened after you reached the beach. I remember that it was getting cold and rainy. There was quite a breeze picking up. The beach was empty. I guess everyone had more sense than me. I let out a nervous laugh. I went into the cave. It was dark, so I used my phone torch to light the way. Then I remember my battery ran out, and the light did too. That's when I felt a blow to my head, and I think I was in and out of consciousness for a while. The next thing I remember was the sea lapping into the cave. That soon brought me round. I hurried out, but the tide was coming in fast. I fought through it, and at one point, I thought the sea was going to sweep me away. That's when I saw the man with the dog. I think his name was Jeff. Yes, he called the incident in. The people at the pub were concerned about you. PC Bickerford flicks through a few pages in her notebook. I'm sorry I left like that, especially as they helped me, but I wanted to get home. PC Barnes clears his throat. So what happened after that? There were a few people, three, I think. I was wet and cold. They sort of half carried me into the pub. The woman gave me a hoodie and helped dry me off in front of the fire. That's when I realized that my phone had died. I knew my husband, Damien, would be worried, and I don't know his number by heart, so I left them.
Going back to the incident, do you remember hearing or seeing anyone in the cave? PC Barnes's radio crackles. He speaks through it, explaining where he is. I continue after he stops talking. No, all I felt was the bang to my head. I thought I heard something like a shoe scraping on the ground. I think back, trying to grasp at anything that might help. But I don't have a thing. Then my heart quickens as I think of the message scrawled on the car window. Someone followed me there. Before I left Lou, there was a dark-coloured car parked outside the cottages, either black or blue. I came back while my husband was out with the girls. Realizing that he had the cottage keys, I decided to head off to Polperro. The driver must have waited for me to leave and followed me. Then there was the message. Whoever was in that car must have left a message on the passenger's side window while I was in Polperro. I found it when I went back to the car park. Do you know the make and model of the car? I wish I'd taken more notice. I don't know what make it was. It was a normal-sized car, not a four-wheel drive or an SUV. He leaned forward slightly. We can see if there is any CCTV covering the car park. Do you have a photo of the message? My dad walks in and places two mugs of coffee on the table. No, as I said, my phone had died, but there was a parking fine on my windscreen, but it wasn't in a plastic bag, which I know they normally are. That was odd. I'll have the car park ticket too, the one I paid for from the machine. That should say on it when I arrived. I'll get them for you, my dad says. Wait, I'll come with you. The parking fine might be evidence if someone took it out of the bag and touched it. PC Barnes stands. My dad grabs the keys from the table and pops the door on the latch as they both head out. PC Bickerford takes a swig of the coffee. Your dad makes a grand coffee. As I wait for them to come back, I listen to the girls running around above us, yelling and laughing. If only my life was as fun and simple as theirs. How old are they? 4 and 5. I have a 5-year-old. Lovely age, the PC smiles. The officer and my dad wipe their feet as they come back in out of the cold. PC Barnes grips the small plastic evidence bags that now contain the ticket and my fine. He then spends a couple of minutes standing under the main light, scrutinizing the paperwork. Where did you say the message was? On the passenger window, but the rain washed it away. He scrunches his brow. There's something half written along the bottom of the parking fine. I can make out smudged ink and the words stayed and long. It's a good job that I made myself remember exactly what was written. It said on the window, you've already stayed too long. They must have written in the dirt on the window first, realizing that it would probably rain. Maybe they wrote it on the fine, too. Normally, when parking fines are issued, they come in a little plastic bag. You're right about that. PC Bickerford scrunches her brow. There was definitely no bag. My attacker must have removed it to write the note, then forgotten to put it back. PC Barnes sits again. Why did you go to Polperro alone today? I pull my phone out and pass it to the officer, with the message chain open, showing them Will's closed account. When they click on his profile, nothing comes up, and in the message chain he's also nameless. Barnes scrolls around a little, taking in my profile too. You're the Kate whose baby sister drowned, aren't you? I follow your page. I'm guessing that article has brought the cranks out. I follow it too. Such a sad thing to happen. PC Bickerford tilts her head. Everything floods out. It's as if I can't stop talking. This is what I came for. And while I have the police here, I want them to do more. I tell him about how I felt the messages were more than just a hoax, how I'd been watched since we'd arrived in Lu. See, he even sent me a message stating that he saw me at the harbour. He was watching me then. My husband saw this, and now he's left me. Tears trickled down my face. I didn't even get the chance to tell Damien that I'm not having an affair. That doesn't excuse all my lies, though. But I hope that he'll be able to trust me again. PC Barnes nods.
We take threats like this very seriously. If you see anyone hanging around again, call us straight away. When you receive these messages, why didn't you call us?
PC Barnes presses his lips together. I've called so many times with these types of messages, and so has my dad. He nods. They always lead to nothing. I thought I should dig a little more before contacting you. I didn't want to waste your time again.
He drank down the coffee and stood. You will never be wasting our time. If anything else happens, or you remember something that might help us later, call straight away. We'll head to Polperro tomorrow and ask a few more questions, see if anyone saw anyone acting suspiciously. We're already trying to locate where all the CCTV is, and someone will go through it all. But that could take a while, and there's definitely not any by the beach.
I was there too, my dad speaks up.
At Polperro?
Yes, he glances in my direction. I came to see Katie, and when I got there, I could see that she was in trouble, so I signalled for help.
PC Barnes scribbled down a few notes. I exhale with relief. At last, I'm not alone. The police believe me, and that's all I could have hoped for. For a moment, I wonder if I should say anything about the woman who owns the ice cream shop, but I can't. If I tell the police, she might clam up and say nothing to them. She seemed reluctant to speak to me when I chased her down. No, I can't afford to lose her trust. I will see her tomorrow, and I will visit Cody's father in the morning, like I'd planned to do. The police have enough on their plates with going through CCTV and interviewing people. I'm not allowing Jess's case to take a back seat. Besides, I'm only here for a few more days. I have to know what happened, and I know the ice cream seller is going to tell me what she knows. I have to hang on a little longer. Right now, I wish Damien were here. I want someone to hold me and comfort me in only the way that he does. If only I could turn back the clock on today and start again. It's as if my dad can sense my sadness. He places an arm over my shoulder. It's all going to be okay, Katie. The police will get to the bottom of all this. I wish I had as much faith in them as he does, but I don't. Right now, I've never felt so abandoned and alone.
31. Natalie. Tuesday the 25th of October. 4 in the morning. 4:10. Gust of wind rattles bedroom window. 4:35. Seagull squawks. 4:38. Joists expanding as heating kicks in. It's no good. Natalie had barely slept all night, and trying for a minute longer was tantamount to torture. That and the racing stress dreams that seemed to merge her encounter with Mary and bumping into Kate. She stepped into her slippers and headed to the kitchen. She didn't intend for things to get that heated with Mary, and when Kate nearly ran her over, it was like a sign that this all had to end. No more lies. She wasn't going to be the one who prolonged this heartache any longer. Mary, Kate, Cody, Laura, Archie. Each one in turn flashed through her mind. She flicked the kettle on and gazed out over the harbour. Still, the rain came down, although it was more of a misty drizzle now. She tossed a tea bag into the same cup she'd used all day yesterday. Stained around the rim and bitty at the bottom,
she didn't care. Reaching into the fridge, she pulled out the last of the milk and gave it a sniff. Recoiling, she poured it down the sink. The sour milk perfectly reflected the sour mood that cast a shadow on the beautiful seaside town that she'd spent all her life in. Grabbing her phone from the side, she took a seat at her little table and sipped the black tea. A tinge of bitterness hit her. The seat still had the awful seat pad on it that Alan used to like sitting on. For years she tried to get rid of it. Now she could. It was proving hard. As scruffy as it was, it would stay for now. She glanced at the blue lint that had come off his jumper, still stuck to the rough material. She swallowed as she thought of Rachel, the girl who had no idea who her father really was. She glanced at the photo of her in-laws that was hung on the wall. Rachel definitely had Alan's mother's eyes, she was certain of that. As Natalie hit the table, her phone bounced. There was so much she wanted to scream at Alan right now, but that opportunity had never been an option. Her suspicions had been there, but only in death had they been confirmed. She grimaced as she drank her tea, the bitterness and strength almost drying her tongue out. All she could think of were Mary's pleas for forgiveness. Maybe it would be better to drop everything. Drop Kate, drop Rachel, and the truth. Drop it all, and concentrate on the future. Glancing out of the window, she saw Cody sitting at the back of his boat, drinking from his flask as rain trickled down his face. Natalie wondered if he had been up all night too, similar things churning through his mind. It's hard to sleep when you're lying to everyone. Hurrying to her bedroom, Natalie put on the same jumper that she'd worn yesterday, and a pair of old jeans. She needed to speak to Cody again. Once upon a time, she'd have done what she could to protect the man and Archie, but not now. She owed them nothing now that Alan had died. Grabbing her coat, she almost slipped on the threadbare hall carpet as she hastily left out the side door. She jogged over to Cody.
"You bloody liar!"
She knew that he'd had something going on with Mary, and that they were all in this together.
"Go back to bed, Natalie. Go and sleep whatever it is off."
Cody put his cup down and stepped off his boat. Natalie hurried down the concrete steps and pushed Cody. The man stepped back and placed a hand on his chin, his brows furrowed.
"What the hell? I know you're grieving, Nat, but you're acting like a crazy."
She'd give him crazy.
"Are you sleeping with Mary? Is that why she's protecting you?"
Natalie tried to picture Cody and Mary in the cabin, her legs wrapped around him as she screamed with ecstasy, and the thought turned her stomach. All of a sudden, she saw Alan instead. A shiver ran down her spine. Everything about her life felt cheap now. Her memories erased and replaced with the truth of Alan and Mary. She felt like a pound shop bargain that had still ended up in the reduced pile. Had they laughed about her when they were together? Humiliation burned her cheeks. Pacing back and forth, Natalie roared and leaned against the wall.
"Answer me!"
Cody stared at her, not saying a word. "You probably need to stay on her good side so she doesn't blab about your dad. Is that why you'd risk everything?" Before Natalie could take a deep breath to continue, Cody darted over towards her and slammed her against the wall.
"You leave my dad out of this. I am not sleeping with Mary. Never have done, never will. You go about spreading those rumors. I'll spread your remains on the seabed, and not lose a single night's sleep. You will not upset my wife or daughter. Do you hear me?"
She didn't believe a word that came out of the man's mouth. If he could keep the secret of his father for that long, what else was he keeping in that head of his?
"What happened, Cody?"
She had to push him harder. Speckles of saliva hit her cheek as the man seethed, breathing in and out through the thin gaps between his teeth.
"Nothing," absolutely nothing.
Cody let go of Natalie and stepped back.
Dad?
Daisy stepped down, a cool box gripped between her fingers.
Is everything okay? What's going on?
Nothing, my love. We were just saying how dull it looks today, weren't we?
The last thing Natalie wanted was to upset Daisy. The girl had nothing to do with any of this.
Yes, awful looking day.
Natalie, are you okay? You look as pale as a sheet.
She knew Daisy could sense all was not right.
Just a hangover, love.
Natalie was just saying that she has a lot on, so she was just leaving.
Yes, got to go.
Natalie exhaled as she tried to hide her shaking hands, but the tremor in her voice was harder to disguise.
By the way, Dad, I can only help you out this morning. I'm meeting Bethany and Rachel for brunch, making the most of half term. So, you taking me out fishing, or are we staying here talking all day?
Daisy stepped onto the boat, placing the cool box on the back seat. She slipped her hood off as she reached the cabin and allowed her long caramel brown hair to fall over her shoulders.
Yes, we best get going.
As Daisy headed deeper into the cabin, Cody moved close to Natalie until their noses nearly touched.
I'm going to find out exactly what it is that you're covering up. Natalie stepped back, not wanting to ingest any more of Cody's coffee breath. I won't repeat myself. If you know what's good for you, you'll keep out of it and mind your own business.
Cody turned away and got onto his boat. That was the second threat she'd received after having Mary say almost the same thing. Cody was definitely sleeping with Mary, and they were both hiding what Archie did together. God knows why. It's not like Archie was even in a position to be questioned by the police, given how ill he was. She watched as Daisy passed a sandwich to her father and took one for herself. When the truth came out, it was going to rip through the town like a tornado, leaving destruction in its wake. As Cody's boat chugged out of the harbour, she watched on. She was sick of putting everyone else's feelings first, while they all laughed at her.
Let the truth commence, she whispered.
32. Kate. The sat-nav is telling me to turn left, but I can't see how unless I head straight into woodland. Then I spot the tiny single-track road that is almost overgrown at either side. I turn into what must be the brambles, clattering over the bumps. After seeing two passing places, I'm wowed by the most amazing view as I pull up. One wrong move in the car could see me tumbling into the sea below from this dizzying height, with death being the only possible outcome. My stomach clenches as I think of Damien. I told him that I was coming to Lou for closure, and I haven't deviated from that plan. Only closure doesn't only involve spreading a few flower petals off the harbour. It involves delving as deeply as possible into what happened that day. I wished he'd answer his phone. I've left messages, lots of them, but he hasn't replied, and that hurts. Now I feel awful about leaving my children with my father. His only instruction was not to leave the house under any circumstances, and no drinking. Not a drop. At first the girls were shy, but when I left, he'd made them breakfast and was playing board games with them. I have no option but to trust him. He was worried, I could tell. Not about looking after the girls. About me coming here today, alone. I told him that not much harm could come to me while visiting a nursing home. He pulled a bit of a frown, but he understood. I'm doing this for both of us. We need to bury this chapter of our lives to move on. I now realize that my father needs that as much as me. Swallowing, I wonder if the lie I told to get my visit here will catch up with me and if the police will find out and wonder why I didn't tell them that I was coming here.
I know they'll only slow me down by saying that they'll do it. Then they won't get around to it like the times before. They take leads, and they never follow up on them properly. They care that I was attacked, but my long-dead sister isn't a priority for them. I glance up at the huge white building that looks to be about 10 rooms across and 3 floors high. Some of the rooms have balconies. Others have full-length windows. It must have been a grand family home in the past. Time waits for no one, and I have to get in there, do what I came to do, and get out. I also have to remember that I'm Nadine Turner, a relative who is visiting the area. Don't say your name is Kate, I remind myself. My phone rings, and what a coincidence. It's Nadine, the very person whose name I'm using. I remember that I didn't message her back. Hi, Nadine.
Hi, lovely. How's your holiday going? She pauses.
I know you mentioned that you were going to Lou, and I was thinking about you and your sister. It must be so hard being back there. Thought I'd just see how you were. I almost want to cry at her concern. She speaks so warmly to me, and we've become really good friends in such a short time. She's my lunch and cake buddy, and I've spoken to her a few times about Jess. She's one of the only people who's listened to me go on and on about what happened. So much has happened. I fill her in, and end on the events of last night, and a lump sticks in my throat as I tell her that Damien has left me.
Shit, are you okay?
The sore head and the nausea hurt less than Damien leaving.
That's awful. I hope they catch the bastard that attacked you, and Damien will come round when he's had a chance to calm down. What are the police doing?